All right, thanks. So, and it's not over there today, but usually there's a notebook over by the donation box, and it gives us the opportunity to write down a topic that you'd like us to hit upon at some point. And I think I've covered two, or with today I'll cover the second one or the third one. I don't remember. But someone had, or actually I think a couple people had wanted to talk about self-defense. So we're going to take the time to do that, maybe in the 27 minutes I have left. Oh no, I got 30. I got 37 minutes left. We got lots of time. We're going to discuss that, but maybe not from a standpoint you were expecting. So does anybody want to give a quick definition in kind of the common sense? What is the definition of self-defense? Anybody want to touch upon that? Clay, do you want to run around, or Jake, or somebody with this? You don't want to run around? Well, I'll throw out one definition. It's to defend oneself or personal property from injury. And to start off, let's dive in, and that can be done in a number of different ways, right? To defend oneself, if I want to defend myself or my family or my property, I can go about that in multiple ways, right? And we'll kind of get into some of those here in a moment. But to start off with, let's look into to what extent do we have the right and or the obligation to defend self. Let's go back to Exodus 22. And I'll give you a spoiler alert. I'm in the camp that I feel that God, through his scriptures, gives us the okay or maybe even the mandate to self-defend. Exodus 22, verse 1, it says, "When someone steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, the thief shall pay 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. The sheep..." I need to cover it. Let me see. Susie sells seashells by the seashore. No. "The thief shall make restitution, but if unable to do so, shall be sold for the theft." So here, we're going to get to one, the kids are going to get to one of the commandments where God says very clearly, you shall not steal. And here he's giving the consequences of that theft over and beyond the consequence of the commandment, which is death. In verse 2, it says, "If a thief is found breaking in and is beaten to death, no blood guilt is incurred." Verse 3, "But if it happens after sunrise, blood guilt is incurred." So there's something interesting here in verse 22. If a thief is found breaking in during the day, God's kind of saying we probably have more opportunity in terms of how we defend or go after the thief. But if it's at night, after dark, there's a lot less opportunity. The thief has a lot more advantage on his side, doesn't he? And so God here is making it pretty clear. He says, if that thief is found breaking in at night and is beaten to death, so there's one of the options, there's no blood guilt. So here we have a scripture where God, in a sense, is condoning the killing of this thief. Let's go to Deuteronomy 22, in verse 27. This is talking about rape. In verse 27, it says, "Since he found her in open country, the engaged woman may have cried for help, but there was no one to rescue her." So what it's talking about in the verses leading up to this is if a rape is about to be taken place, there's an obligation for the female to cry out. And the scripture says that if she's in town, in the city, within the village, within the walls of the city, where there's people within earshot, basically, She has the obligation to cry out. If she doesn't, she's at guilt. But if she does, then those that hear her are at the obligation to come and help her. But here in verse 27 says, if the person that's trying to rape her does it out in the open country, basically where outside of earshot of someone else, the engaged woman may have cried for help, but there was no one to hear her or to rescue her. So again, there's obligation for us to step in if we know wrong is being done and to take care of the situation. If we move into the New Testament, to Luke, in chapter 22, and verse 35, Christ is saying to the disciple, he said to them, when I sent you out without a purse or a bag or sandals, did you lack anything? And they said, no, not a thing. And he said to them, but now the one who has a purse must take it, and likewise a bag. And the one who has no sword must sell his cloak and buy one. Verse 37, for I tell you, this scripture must be fulfilled in me, and he was counted among the lawless, and indeed, what is written about me is being fulfilled. And they said, Lord, look, here are two swords. And he replied, that is enough. So at one point, he actually commands the disciples to carry swords. Not every single one of them, but for the group that was going out, at least two swords. If we jump back to Matthew 26, in verse 51, we see a sword that gets used by one of the disciples. It says, suddenly one of those with Jesus put his hand on the sword, drew it, and struck the slave of the high priest, cutting off his ear. And Jesus said to him, put your sword back into its place, for all who take the sword will perish by the sword. Notice Christ said, just simply put the sword back. Wasn't the time or the place. Something else here is going on. Didn't tell him he shouldn't have a sword. But just said, you're jumping the gun here a little bit. So that's just several scriptures that give us the possibility of self-defending. There's probably others that we can jump into, and quite honestly, with the time allotted, there is so much here that we could spend a lot of time on. But I kind of want to get the crux of something here. So now, what does our state or local government say? Well, here in Michigan, we now have the ability that by law, if one of us, as an adult, I think it's over the age of 18, wants to apply for a concealed license permit, by law, the state has to accept that application and qualify it. There's some areas, or there's a few situations where they may deny the application, but the way the law is now written in Michigan is if the application tests through those criteria, they have to issue you a concealed weapons permit. And prior to that, and that's been, almost 10 years ago now, Rick, that the law changed, probably? Prior to that, the state had to issue the application, but they could literally sit on the application for as long as they wanted to. And it actually boiled down to the sheriff in each county. And there was a few counties where the sheriff said, nope, I will look at them and I will deal with them as quick as I can and get them out. And there was quite a few counties where the sheriff says, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. Let them sit and rot, in a sense. But now every sheriff has to deal with the application process, whether they want to or not. We have the right in Michigan to open carry. Concealed, I must conceal my weapon at all times. If it's seen by you, I could actually go to jail for brandishing. Concealed, I must conceal it at all times. But Michigan also has an open carry law. it must be open at all times. Strapped to your leg, strapped to your hip, however you want to do it. But it has to be visible at all times, so you don't dare put a lightweight jacket on, even if it's unzipped and you can see it most of the time. If some of the time you're actually concealing that weapon, you're outside of the law. But in Michigan, the state says that we can open carry if we want. But again, you have to qualify through the age and ownership of at least a handgun. The castle law. In Michigan, here prior to 10 years ago, our right to defend ourselves in our home or on our property was really restricted. The way the law read was that if we felt the need to pull out a gun because of a break-in, a robbery, or something like that, on our property, in our home, the only way we could use lethal force is if we had exhausted all other options. Which made it really difficult, because a prosecutor at that point can say, well, yeah, you shot him, and yes, he was breaking into your bedroom while you're still laying in bed, but you had a baseball bat 3 feet away. You should have used that first. That was a big problem. I'm calling it the Castle Law because I don't think it's actually deemed that anymore, is it? The original law was called the Castle Law. But today, we reverted back to no-retreat law, where now, if on our property, in our home, we are confronted, we have the right simply to defend ourselves, period. It's our castle. We can, so that's what Michigan says. We don't have to retreat, whereas previously you had to keep retreating until you had zero options left. Now we don't have to retreat. It's my property. So I just very lightly touched on a couple things that the Bible has to say and a couple things our state has to say. Anybody want to add to that before we move on a little bit? So now the question comes up, if the state says I can defend myself, and God or Scripture says I can defend myself, at least at times, am I prepared to defend myself? Simply having a weapon is not a defense. You must also possess ability to confidently and effectively use it. So what is our personal responsibility? And I bring this up no matter what the weapon is. I carry a little tiny pocket knife with me. Yep, that's it right here. It's only about, the blade's about 2.5 inches long. I don't really carry it for personal defense. Potentially, could I ever? I don't know. It's not really a good weapon in any situation, because I'd have to get pretty close to somebody. It's not all that easy to hang on to. And another aspect is, I haven't prepared or practiced use with it as a defensive weapon. So I'm probably not going to be all that good with it. You know, if I take a knife and I hold it like this and I'm going to come at you, all you have to do is come across my arm and I'm going to drop it because of nerves. It's useless. You know, so if it's a knife, how am I supposed to hold it? Am I supposed to hold it like this? Am I supposed to hold it out to the side? There's some consideration here, right? So, I just, again, for the moment, I want to talk about our personal responsibility. If we're going to go into a situation where we feel the need to protect ourselves, have we truly prepared for that kind of situation in advance to the best we could? The topic itself, self-defense, most people think right away of a gun. So I'll kind of talk about that, but again, I just showed that a knife is a potential, but if you really don't know how to use a knife in a fight, it's probably not going to go well with you. I was talking to Tom this week, Tom has some knowledge of martial arts. And if I didn't know it, and I decided to pick a fight with him, even though I had a knife, I bet Tom could disarm me pretty quick and pretty severely. Not because he was necessarily quicker, but because he was prepared. He spent years, right, learning martial arts, controlled. It's not a case where he has a weapon that he carries around with him that he can count on. I don't know how to phrase it. He has the confidence that if someone surprises him, he can use that weapon in a way that is most effective for the moment, in the moment. Meaning he can discern whether he should do give me a backflip or a punch to the throat. You know, he can in a split second, he can think through his options that his weapon avails him of. Can we do that with any of the weapons that we're considering or would consider? The baseball bat over in the corner. Okay, so it's in the corner. It's at the ready. Now what? The situation just come up. It's time to use it. How are you going to use it? Have you ever picked it up? Do you know how much it weighs? How easy is it to swing in your bedroom? Could you truly make contact, you know, with it? So now let's go to a gun. Do you know how to hold it? Do you know how to aim it? It's like this, right? Do you know what a correct target picture is? And what I mean by that, if I pull out my weapon, I only did it because I felt like I was probably going to have to use it. Not before that. If I'm going to have to use it, I'm going to use it in a way that totally stops whoever's coming at me from coming at me. That doesn't mean I'm going to shoot him in the foot and hope that stops him. I'm going to have a correct target picture where one shot will end the situation. You don't do that by buying a gun and for 5 years have it sitting under your bed and you never went to a range, you never shot it, you never learned how to even load the thing, how to clean it. What's the capability of that gun? There's some ammo that's going to be kind of worthless to you. A .22 does not have the same firepower as a .40 Smith & Wesson. Do you know your liability if you pull out a weapon? No matter what the circumstances are, do you know what your liability is and how to negate it? Because someone who has practiced in self-defense, no matter what the weapon is, they know the liability, and in a split second, they're making all these decisions. And it's because they know what the questions are. They know what the decisions are. And within a split second, it just comes to them because they've practiced. Are you ready for that? Do you know the effective range of your weapon? Again, the baseball bat. How close do I need to be? Well, if we get to the point where you're right here, there's not much I can do with the baseball bat. A lot of people watch the movies and they think that with a handgun, they can shoot 40, 50 yards and be effective. There's some people who practice hours and hours a week, and yes, they get to that kind of proficiency. But that is extremely difficult with a handgun. With a handgun, I'm going to say 15 feet probably is about the max you might ever want to consider. After that, you're just throwing lead who knows where. And I literally mean who knows where, because you don't understand with a handgun, it's going like that rather than like that. What about de-escalation techniques? Do you know any? Have you ever practiced any? Would you consider using those, no matter what the situation is? And then finally, do you know when to actually engage and when not to? Again, it's all decisions that within a split second, it's going to happen just like this. You know, here, Clay mentioned about the motorcycles. And I've rode in a motorcycle for quite a bit of my life, but here more recently, I got a big bike. This thing weighs about 900 pounds without me on it. And it's intimidating for me to pick up for me to get on that bike the first time. I was a little bit wobbly, especially if I have to do some tight maneuvers, you know, like a U-turn or something like that, trying to keep that weight underneath me and not lose it to the side. Well, now it's been several months, and I've been diligent. I would practice up and down our road, and I'd go down to a parking lot about 3 miles down, just down our straight road, go to the parking lot, and I'd do some figure eights, and I'd do some U-turns and things like that. And now I'm getting much more confident on it. I still wobble at times, but I'm much more confident now. With any of this stuff, the same thing happened. Remember the first day you got to drive a car? How hard did you grip the wheel? Do you remember that? Dad, my hands are tired. Same thing happens with, you know, think about in the moment all these things that you may not know if you haven't practiced. So I just want to really stress this. This, I'm not telling you not to do something, but I am telling you if you're going to pursue self-defense, you got to have a plan and you got to have practice. David, what did he kill Goliath with? How many years did he work on his training with that slingshot? What else did he kill with a slingshot?
Lions and
bear. Yep. He also killed him with his bare hands, right? Isn't it phrased that way? That he killed, yes, because when he approaches Saul about going after Goliath, he says, I've killed a lion and bear with my slingshot, isn't it? Phrase that way? I could be wrong. But we know that as a very young lad, he had a slingshot, and out there in the field all day long, just watching sheep if the sheep were behaving, you know, he occupied his time by, you know, slinging some stones around. Let's look at another aspect we have to be very careful of. Matthew 5. Verse 38. It says, you've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evildoer, but if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go also the second mile. Give to everyone who begs from you, and do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you. This is not about criminal action. You might be able to tie it in to one extent. This is about revenge. Just because someone irritates you or does something that you didn't like, you don't do it back to them. we don't take vengeance out. And there's lots of times when, okay, road rage. I'm guilty of it. Am I the only one in the room? I'm not asking you to raise your hands. But every now and then, we do some things that is spiteful, vengeful, something to irritate others, or let them know that they irritated us. And we don't want to do that with a weapon, do we? So, Clay, if you want to come up here, I was thinking the marker, actually. So I wanted to write down some things. What kind of events would you see yourself wanting to use self-defense? We're going to make a list. So anybody want to throw one out?
Home intrusion.
Break in, B&E, however you want to do it. Would you give at least one example of how you would like to self-defend in that situation? So if you put a dash and then the how we might go about it, our potentials. So light. Anybody else want to add to that one? Home intrusion. How would you like to? What's one of the aspects at least you'd like to self-defend there? For myself, I wouldn't mind having a gun available. Richard?
Yeah, my wife brought up the thing today about the St. Louis couple, and they're actually, I guess, trying to prosecute a little bit for managing the weapon. But
right.
They got a real castle law down there, too, that they don't have to retreat. They can banish the weapon. And I was just kind of looking that up a little bit, but I haven't read about if they're getting prosecuted or not, but you don't have to take a step back. You can just stand your ground and banish your weapon. And if the intruder does not, you know, come forward, you can use lethal force. But if he doesn't, then you can't, of course. But you can banish your weapon, like you said.
So intimidation, maybe. With a baseball bat or whatever. Yes. All right, what's another event you would like to potentially have the ability for self-defense? Can you think of another one? Tom?
Yeah, if you were to help somebody that might have been threatened with lethal force or something like that.
So to protect others. So what you're saying is you come up on a scene where somebody else is being... their life is being threatened, or rape, a situation like that, you'd like the ability to self-defend or defend the other person. And any, how would you like to be able to do that?
There was just recently an incident on YouTube where a citizen came upon where a police officer was being attacked, and I think the intruder got, or the assailant got his gun, and the person, a private individual, shot him and killed him before he could kill the police officer.
So hands-on weapon, is that dying? You can lick it, and that might help. All right, what's another situation we might want to use self-defense? Lori?
Attack on my own personal self.
Or okay.
My family. Personal self. Mugging or...
put mugging or something like that. Any other ways you'd want to defend yourself that isn't already up on the board in that situation?
Any way possible.
How about flight? Yeah, Barb?
Yeah, I took a gun course, and there was some lawyers there, or judges. And so I asked her, because in Saginaw at the time, people would stand in front of your car and point a gun at you because they wanted to steal your vehicle. So I asked, you know, what can I do? Can I run over that person? And they told me, you sure can, as long as you don't back up and do it again.
So that's another point. I went through three concealed weapons classes, and one of the big things they stress is if you pull your gun, you're probably going to be in front of a prosecutor no matter what. Doesn't mean you're going to be charged with something, but you're probably going to have to sit down with a prosecutor. And that's one of those split-second decisions you have to make. Right now, is this the time I really should pull my gun or my weapon? All right, what's another situation? Let's get creative here. What's a situation you'd like to be able to self-defend?
When your own family, or like Lori being a bus driver, those that you are supposed to be defending, the children on your school bus, or those that, like, you're on a field trip, you know, those are with you.
Okay, so workplace. Put the workplace. We haven't put that down there. So any other ways you'd like to use self-defense?
No.
Okay.
It's something that I've had to think about a lot with having children on what I would do if someone took one of my kids. Do I try to run after them and leave my other children, or do I scream for help and hope somebody else will help?
Right. Right.
But with, you know, or like one driver had two people, I'm really pretty loud, but somebody had two people with guns chasing after each other around her bus and over top of her bus. And she told our boss, she's like, I'm going to have to drive away because they're endangering the children on my bus. And he's like, well, try not to hit them, but go and do what you got to do.
All right, again, Richard, you got one?
Yeah, if you're in the military, actually, or in law enforcement, you've got a right to defend yourself if the person acts as a threat. But not, you can't be the over-aggressor, even in the military.
Even the military says you can't be the aggressor. Right, you shoot the enemy when the enemy is attacking, yes. All right, again, and we'll take more. You got one?
Probably got less of a need around it here, depending on where you're at, but wild animals, hiking.
Okay, write that one down. That's a good one. I like that. Carry a big stick? How would you go about that one, Clay?
Probably a gun, but I'll take whatever I can get.
All right. So, yeah, write something down beside that. Bill, you got?
I'm sorry. It was the shepherd hook.
A shepherd hook, yes.
The shepherd hook that took the lion's life.
Okay.
It wasn't the sunshine.
Go ahead, Bill.
I'm one of those, like Aaron said, that I've had my my gun for 6 years. I've never shot it. Never been to shooting range. And Ethan and I was at Sam's one day. I was getting him out of his car seat. And there was a guy really suspicious. I was really concerned that he was going to harm Ethan or myself. And that's the time I wish I would have had my weapon with me. But they say once you make that decision, like you said, you pull that trigger, you may go to prison if you can't justify what you've done.
Because the problem there is, what about innocent bystanders that get caught up in the situation?
Prayer.
As an effect?
Yes. My aunt had a prosthetic leg, and she didn't have any way of defending herself physically, and a lady was charging her, and my aunt said, God, I need you to protect me.
I can't do this. And the lady, she said the lady stopped and had this look of horror on her face and ran the other way. My aunt's like, I can only imagine that she saw these the band of angels behind me ready to defend me. She's like, I didn't know anything else I could do. So, prayer.
Yeah. Do you have one, another one, Rick?
Yeah, just a little comment on your earlier comment about flight. Flight is extremely problematic. Odds are you're banking that you're faster than the other guy, and that he has nothing that can get to you if he can't catch you. So if he's armed, I haven't heard of anybody outrunning a 357 Magnum lately. So that's a problem. But also, you may stumble, whatever, and they catch up with you. So it's not the ideal thing to take up. And it used to be under the flight rather than fight rule that we had in Michigan, you had to flee. And that could oftentimes mean, is there a doorway to get out? You may be trapped in a corner. So flight is very problematic. But it is an option if you're really good at it.
All right, again, what do you need to defend yourself against? We've hit a lot of the major ones. Come on, there's some other areas of your life you need defense. What are they?
Satan.
Thank you. I had that on my... So how are you going to defend yourself against Satan?
Prayer.
There's one way.
Study,
yeah. Praying, putting on the armor of God. What was that, Jerry? Fasting, yes.
I just tell him I'm a child of God and leave me alone and in the name of Jesus, get out of my house.
Yep. Okay, what's another area? There's a whole lot we haven't touched on. What about aging? Is there a lot of people that try? Okay. Huh?
Plastic surgery.
Plastic surgery? Yep, sometimes they try plastic surgery.
Somebody's aging today.
Someone's aging today, yes, and she's doing it pretty well. My wife, Lori, it's happy birthday. Thank you. What about our health? Do we self-defend when it comes to our health? What about mask? It's a self-defense, right? Are you starting to feel a need to self-defend against me at the moment? What about diet? Do we self-defend with diet? Our health with diet? Medicine? Oils? What about driving? Do we self-defend when we're driving? We can use our turn signals every now and then, can't we? Use the proper lane. What about temptation? Do we self-defend in temptation? How?
Ask God to help us.
What about calling a friend? Maybe somebody that's been there before. What about our children's spiritual welfare? Are we active in self-defense with that? How do we do that?
Teaching them right from wrong.
Aaron was a great example of that today. We saw her here, but we also got to see what she does at home with her sons during the week. It's a lot like what my mom did. Well, no, there was this rod deal too. What about financial? Do we self-defend financially? Do we? Do we save? Are we good stewards? Do we budget? Tithe? Invest? What about self-defending against me? Because I'm capable of a whole lot of hurt to myself, aren't I? What about self-defense against deceit? Where does it come from? Every single time, isn't it? I wanted this list because how many of these areas that we just brought up are we experts in self-defense? Are we prepared to defend with weapons that are truly capable? Or how often do we self-defend with the world's viewpoint of weapons and very nonchalant, very casually, I'll try this now. I don't really need a budget. What do I need to save for? Oh, they got this antivirus coming out. I can't wait till they finally get one approved. I'm going to take it because I don't want to catch that. Yeah. Jake.
I don't know how this fits in, but the kind of opposite, their words, is their militant function of a weapon with what's going on, whether it's now no one can go into a store without a mask, you know. It's words of mouth. It's the top decision makers saying, this is what it's going to be like now. They're using that as a weapon.
Yeah. My dad, when I was a teen, came home one night, it was during the winter, and he told us that, he was a traveling salesman of a sort, and told us that that day there was a storm had come in, you know, blowing snow and stuff like that. And on his way home, the highway got bad enough that it was just two tracks, you know, down the slow lane, and you didn't dare get out of those tracks because if you did, it was going to yank you off the road. You were going to go into a spin. And he said, I was keeping my speed down. I was doing pretty good. And he says, then I crested a hill on the highway, and as I come down that hill, I picked up a little bit more speed than what I really wanted to, but I didn't dare hit the brakes, and sure enough, I got over just a little bit too much and caught more snow than what I had, and it put me in a spin. And he says, I just cried out, Father, save me. He says, I did two 360s, ended up right back in those two tracks, and kept going straight. And I heard that as a teen. And it wasn't until quite a few years later, it hit me. I remembered that story, and it hit me. It's like, there's no way I would ever cry out to God like that in a split second. I might curse in the split second, but how do you get to the point where your very first thought in a split second is, Father, save me? Because all these things here, the reality is we can't see them coming in most cases. It's already upon us when we realize that the threat is right here. And it's almost too late to react. And our only defense is what Demetria brought up. It's God. That is truly our only defense, because he knows what's coming. We can pray to him in advance and say, Father, today as I take off, will you protect me? Throughout the whole day, will you protect my family? Will you open my eyes to situations that I just need to be aware of? Give me discernment. When I'm listening or talking with people and I hear a phrase that I don't know if I should agree with or not, give me discernment and wisdom. Do we do that? And it took me probably a good year or more. I worked hard at every opportunity, Father, save me. And I hope now I'm at a place where if the next event comes along, that truly is my split-second decision, Father, save me. Barb, you got something you want to add?
Granddaughter was born. She was in the NICU. She was not doing well. Jerry came up and we anointed her. I was taking our other daughter home and we're sitting at a stoplight and I was going to go straight and a teenager hit me and pushed me out in the middle of the road. Now, I was planning on going straight and God was with me. I always pray before I get in the car and go anywhere, protect me or protect us. And my car turned. And there was a car that missed us because it turned and I didn't do it. So God did answer my prayers and he was there with me. Us. No.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that it's wrong to have physical self-defense things in our toolbox, but what is our first reaction? Is it, Father, save me? What do I do next? What do I say? Matthew 26, verse 53. This is Christ right after, Matthew 26, verse 53. This is Christ right after Peter took off the ear of the Roman soldier. He says, do you think that I can appeal to my Father and he will at once send me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled which say it must happen in this way? God loves us as much as he loves his Son. Have we ever considered we have the same opportunity to appeal for angels? In the split second, that he'll hear us and that he'll actually afford us. It may not turn out the way exactly how we wanted it to or expect it to, but do we not know that he will hear us and do something in that split second? Linda?
Yeah, I know. I don't know why sometimes this happens to me, but sometimes I'll be sleeping and all of a sudden, I'll see some dark figure in our bedroom. And it could be because of my ex-husband and what he did and that. But I'm not going to go into that. But sometimes they're scary, and I'll just cry out, and I'll say, Jesus, save me. It goes away. And that has been really helpful for me because next time, I want to just say, oh, what's that scripture? No weapon formed against you shall prosper. And I believe that that can be used towards Satan also. So. Well,
there's another account with Christ, Mark 4. Turn over to verse 35. It says, on that day when evening had come, he said to them, let us go across to the other side. And leaving the crowd behind, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. Other boats were with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that the boat was already being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on a cushion, Christ. And they woke him up and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And he woke up, rebuked the wind, and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." Then the wind ceased, and there was a dead calm. And he said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" It starts out in verse 35. This is Christ talking to the disciples. And they know who he is and what he's capable of doing. He says, "Let us go across to the other side." If God says that to me, that says I'm going to make it to the other side. No matter what comes up in between now and then, I'm going to be on the other side with him. But they didn't believe that. He was right there in the boat with them. They'd watched him do miracles before. And it sounds to me like the very first time a bigger wave hit the side of the ship, they didn't go run down and say, "Hey, Christ, I think we need some help here." They waited quite a while. So they were literally shaking in their boots. And then when they finally got to them, he wasn't concerned. "Oh, well, if you're not concerned, I know I don't need to be concerned. I'm fine." God is in every situation. He's always right here beside us. Do we trust him to take over and stop doing it for ourselves? I told you the questions that I was asked through Andy, but I know for a fact that was God speaking to me, and I think he asked all of us these same questions. Maybe not the same way. Maybe I need to be prodded a little bit differently than you. But the questions were, do you read his word? And do you believe it? Do you converse with him? Do you pray to him? About everything. And do you give back what he commands? Not simply acknowledge him as God, but truly give him back love in forms that glorify him. Because when I answered those questions, the next response was, "So you know you need God and only God, but you're not giving him a reason to step in and help you out." So are we doing everything to give God opportunity to step in and help us out when we need it? There's no way we can defend ourselves from all of this that's coming, that might come down the pike. But we read here just a couple of weeks ago that each and every single one of us, before we were in our mother's womb, he'd laid out a plan for us. That means as long as I'm willing to go along with the plan, I get all the days. If I don't want to go along with the plan, why does he need to give me another day? Another thing we need to think about in these situations when we're talking about confrontation with other people. The person in front of you that you feel the need to defend yourself from, how much do they need God in their life? What's more important, destroying them physically or saving them spiritually? Demetria's your aunt or your... She cried out to God, and God, through angels, I suspect, stopped a person dead in their tracks. And your phrasing was, or her phrasing was, a look of horror on their face. there was a realization of what was taking place, that there's a power here much greater than the ant could afford. How many times have we heard the little stories where someone, during the midst of a robbery or something like that, brought up God or Christ and made the offender pause? Are we going to have that in our tool belt? And do we care more about our own lives than theirs? Because what did Christ say about one who's willing to lay down their life for another? Are we really willing to? If my last act is supposed to be to disciple this person, is our response, so be it? That's what I had. I just, again, this is a huge topic, and we can talk about guns, but I don't know that there's lots of information out. And anybody that wants to talk further about it, don't be afraid to come to me or talk with each other about it. Rick's efficient at guns. Tom has had some experience around them. But we do have spiritual liability here. Tom, you got something you want to add to this?
Yeah, sounds way more.
Okay.
And I think this is our best defense. If you'll look at Psalms verse 91, it says, "He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God, in Him will I trust. Surely He will deliver thee from the snare of the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. He shall cover thee with His feathers, and under His wings shall thou trust. His truth shall be with thy shield and buckler. Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, nor the arrow that flieth by day, nor for the pestilence that walketh in darkness, for the destruction that wasteth at noonday. 1,000 shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand, but it shall not come nigh thee. Only with thy eyes shalt thou prepare and see the reward of the wicked. Because thou hast made the Lord, which is my refuge, even the Most High, thy habitation." And here on verse 10 it says, "There shall be no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come nigh thy dwelling. For He shall give His angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. They shall bear thee up on their hands, lest thou shalt dash thy foot against a stone. Thou shalt tread upon the lion and adder. The young lion and the dragon shall not trample under thy feet. Because He has set His love upon me, therefore will I deliver him. I will set him on high, because he hath known my name. He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble, and I will deliver him and honor him. With long life will I satisfy him and show him my salvation." So again, I think the best defense is God.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Any others? Well, sorry we went a little bit longer than usual. We'll keep trying to tweak things down and as we go, but let's finish up with a song.